Mekutas Sichas Chelek Tazayin Parsha Mishpatim Sicha Beis, a summary of the Sicha. In the Pasuk Yisikna Eved Ivri, if you will buy a Jewish slave, Rashi start, that's the first mitzvah in Parsha Mishpatim. Rashi says that what does Eved Ivri means? It means a slave who is himself a Jew. And then Rashi continues, or maybe it means the slave that belongs to a Jew, and you're buying that slave from but it's talking about a non-Jewish slave. And that's the slave that only works for 6 years, and then you have to let him go. And then Rashi says, but if that was the case, so then why does it say v'isnachaltem? And later in the Torah it says that you're allowed to bequeath your non-Jewish slaves to your children, meaning that they don't go free. So what are you going to do with that if a non-Jewish slave only works for 6 years? So he explains that that will be a non-Jewish slave that you bought from another non-Jew. But if you bought a non-Jewish slave from a Jew, then you're only allowed to work with him for 6 years. I might think that that's what the Pasuk is talking about. So Rashi says, no, it's talking about a Jewish slave. As the Pasuk says later, it's talking only about your own brother, meaning a Jew, only your own brother works for 6 years. But if it's a non-Jewish slave, it goes on forever. So we have to understand about this Rashi. First of all, since he's explaining the words Eved Ivri, that's what he comes to explain. Why does he also quote Ki Sikna, if you will buy? He's not explaining if you will buy. Another thing we have to understand is, why would Rashi think that Eved Ivri means the slave that belongs to a Jew? Why, the more direct meaning is a Jewish slave. As we find other places in the Torah that Yosef is described as Nar Ivri, which means a Jewish young lad, not the young lad that belongs to a Jew, and other places as well. In fact, we find a pasuk that Eved Leish Amaleki, that when the Torah wants to describe a slave that belongs to a Amaleki, he doesn't say Eved Amaleki, he says Eved Leish Amaleki. So why would Rashi think that over here it's talking about an Eved Shel Ivri? A third thing is, why does Rashi say over here, and you might have the question, what do we do with Visnachaltem? That's written all the way at the end of Ayikra. If Rashi has a problem with Visnachaltem over there, you can ask that question. What does he have to bring it up over here for? So to explain this, we all know, everybody knows, that at the when the Yidden went out of Mitzrayim, they collected from the Mitzrayim gold and silver and all kinds of riches. And then by the Yam, they got even more than they did, got in Mitzrayim, as Moshe Rabbeinu had to drive them away from the Yam to move on and to continue traveling, because they were all collecting the gold and the silver that was washing up after the Egyptians drowned. In other words, the Jews were very wealthy at that time. Every single Yid had 60, some vast amount of donkeys full of gold and silver. So since the Elam Mishpatim is Moshe teaching the Yidden right after Matan Torah, a short while after Matan Torah, why would the Torah be describing a situation in which no Jew would sell himself into slavery at a time when everybody was so wealthy? That's something which would be extremely rare or impossible altogether, that they would be talking about selling a Jew into slavery at that time. It's something which is completely unheard of at the time. So Av Eved Ivri, even though the direct meaning of the word is a Jewish slave, but why are we talking about this now, right after Matan Torah, when that's an impossibility? So it makes more logical sense to say that maybe it means Eved Shel Ivri, the slave that belongs to a Jew. In other words, that the Jewish people had many slaves, as we know, as it says in the Aseres Adibreis, that on Shabbos you have to allow your slaves to rest. In other words, that there were slaves at that time. So therefore Rashi is saying that even though the words Eved Ivri more directly mean a Jewish slave, but the context seems to lend itself more to talking about a slave that a Jew is buying a non-Jewish slave from another Jew. Therefore he asks the question, or maybe it's talking about something else, because why would we be talking about a Jewish slave at this time? And since he brought up that if so, the halacha then would be, at least in this Hava Amina, that a non-Jewish slave is only allowed to work for 6 years, so then the child would immediately ask, what are you talking about? We know that Avram had a slave Eliezer, which he owned already by the Bris Ben Absorim, which was when Avram was 70 years old, and he still owned them when Yitzchak was getting looking for a shidduch, was what, after the Akedah, which was when Yitzchak was 37 years old. So therefore that was 67 years later. How did Avram have a slave for 67 years if they're not supposed to work for more than 6 years? That would be the immediate question that a child would ask. So Rashi wants to bavaran, he wants to deal with this question, but he deals with it with an even more impactful question. The child doesn't know to ask the question that later in the Torah it says clearly in the Pasuk that you're allowed to keep a non-Jewish slave forever. So therefore the child only knows to ask the question from Avram, but Rashi prefers to point out the question even more impactfully, that there is a clear Pasuk v'yisnachaltem, that you can keep him forever. So Rashi is driven to bring in the v'yisnachaltem because of the child's question about Avram. So he asks a better question, and therefore he answers that might be only if you bought it from a non-Jew, but if you bought it from a Jew, and so on, he addresses that question. Now this is also the reason that over here Rashi brings the words kisikne. Normally when the Torah introduces a halacha, it doesn't say if so and so will happen. It doesn't say that. It says when this happens. Like, it doesn't say im yake ish esre'eyu, if a Jew will hit another person. It says ki yake. So in other words, here it could have been said eved ivri yoytze b'sheish. That's what it should have said, not ki sikne eved ivri. Why does it say ki sikne? The reason is because here the Torah is trying to tell us we're talking about a Jewish slave. You ask the question, what are you talking about, a Jewish slave? Who's selling himself for a child? No, ki sikne. It's something that is so far off in the distance. Someday the situation could come up where a Jew will sell himself into slavery or be sold into slavery through the Bezna, which is what this pasuk happens to be talking about. So that's why it says ki sikne. So in other words, the word ki sikne indicates that it's talking about a Jewish slave, and therefore it's talking about something in the future. Because if it was talking about a non-Jewish slave, why say ki sikne? That could happen today, that could happen tomorrow. Then the Torah wouldn't have to say kisikne. And that's why Rashi brings kisikne into the mix, because that lends more support to the fact that it's talking about a Jewish slave, because it's something in the future. But now that we've established that the whole mitzvah of the whole halacha of eved ivri is talking about something which is somewhere off into the future, it's not really relevant at that time after Matan Torah. So the question becomes, why is it that the very first mitzvah that the Torah talks about after Matan Torah is kisikne eved ivri? And now that we understand that it's something far in the future, why talk about it now? And Rashi doesn't ask that question. Why is something so obvious that it's discussing something which is so irrelevant at the time, and Rashi doesn't ask that question? So the fact is, the truth is, that Rashi does address it, but a little bit later. He talks about that if a slave decides that he wants to stay past the 6 years, so you have to bore a hole into his ear. So Rashi says, why in the ear? Because this ear which heard at Matan Torah, at Har Sinai, that you shouldn't steal, and he stole and therefore was sold as a slave. Or in the case where he sold himself into slavery, he heard that the Jewish people should be slaves to Hashem, and he decided to sell himself into slavery, so therefore his ear should be bored. From this we see that even though in Torah, the Torah never connects the mitzvah to the reward which you get for the mitzvah. Even where the Torah tells you what the reward is, like let's say the fact that you, if you honor your parents, you will live a long life. What's the connection between honoring your parents and living a long life? Also, the fact that you honor your parents, when does your long life come? Many, many, many years later. So there isn't really a relationship between the mitzvah and the reward, or the aveira and the penalty. It doesn't connect why this mitzvah has malchus, this aveira has malchus, and this one has koras, and so on. that we don't have a relationship. This is the only place where the Torah relates the penalty, boring a hole in the ear, with Har Sinai, with what the violation was, the ear that heard it, Har Sinai. So in other words, that this is the only place, which the only mitzvah which the Torah relates directly back to Har Sinai. It's the only one. And that's the reason that that's, for some reason, the Torah connects the two, which is the reason that the Torah starts with the mitzvah of Eved Ivri, with the halachas of Eved Ivri, because in the Torah's view, the Eved Ivri halacha is directly connected to Har Sinai, and that's why it follows immediately after Har Sinai. Al Pipnimis Yonim, it makes it even more gishmak, because what is the whole uftu? What was the whole purpose of Matan Torah? The Avos also fulfilled the Torah, but their fulfilling of the mitzvahs was unable to have an impact on the physical world. Nothing changed in the world. Matan Torah is where you're meant to make a change in the world around you. The mitzvahs now have an impact on the world. And this, it happens to be that the mitzvah of Eved Ivri shows that impact on the world. How so? Because the Chassidus explains that there are three different types of slaves. There is an Eved Knani, and the Eved Knani means somebody who his Nefesh Bahamis is raging and has all these desires and so on, but the Yid is able to subdue them and to control them and not to do what he shouldn't do. But the Nefesh Bahamis is all about doing, fulfilling his desires. An Eved Ivri means somebody who has already had had somewhat of a modifying effect on the Nefesh HaBahamis, and the Nefesh HaLakis already is making some inroads with the Nefesh HaBahamis, and the Nefesh HaBahamis also already is seeing things in a more refined way, and therefore is not it doesn't have its an agenda of fulfilling its own desires. It also has some refined morals, but it's still in a raw state. It's not yet that the Nefesh HaBahamis is completely transformed. An Amma Evriya, that's the level where the Nefesh HaBahamis is completely transformed, and it's somebody that's already adopted the whole agenda of the Nefesh HaLakis. That's how Chassidus explains the three levels. So in other words, after Matan Torah, what is a Yid supposed to start doing? To be an Eved Knani, that isn't, that you don't need Matan Torah. That's something which nothing has changed. That's how that would be more similar to the way the Avos did. The Nefesh HaBahamis hasn't been transformed at all. The Uftu of Matan Torah is an Eved Ivri, that you have to start the transformation. There has to be a change in the world, the change in the Nefesh HaBahamis. And after you've made that first change, then you can go on to the next subject, which is the next subject in Mishpatim, which is Amma Evriya, where there is a complete transformation. That's why this is the mitzvah which is chosen right after Matan Torah, because it expresses the transformation that a Yid has to bring about through Matan Torah.